The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
In this special episode, I have an in-depth conversation in studio with the legendary meteorologist, the former longtime director of the National Hurricane Center, a real expert on climate change, Dr. Neil Frank. I'm looking forward to it. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
One of the most important issues of our time is climate change, previously known as global warming. Now, this is part of the left's agenda to dramatically transform our economy, in fact, the world economy, to deal with this supposed so-called crisis. But is it a crisis? How serious of a crisis is it? Is the Earth, in fact, warming, and how much? Is carbon dioxide responsible for that warming? Are human beings the culprits in the catastrophe of climate change? Are storms and hurricanes and forest fires the result of this warming? Is it the case that the oceans are rising and we have to worry about the future of the coasts? What's really behind all this, and what, if anything, should we do about it? I'm really happy to have right here in studio a real legend, a great meteorologist, Dr. Neil Frank. Now, Dr. Frank was the longtime director of the National Hurricane Center. In fact, I think he was the longest standing director of the Hurricane Center. He was also for many years, this was after he left the Hurricane Center, the chief meteorologist for KHOU-TV. That's the CBS affiliate here in Houston. He has his bachelor's degree in chemistry, his master's and PhD degrees in meteorology from Florida State University. And this is a guy who knows whatever you need to know about climate change. Hey, Dr. Frank, thank you for being here. Debbie is a super fan. She's seen you on TV over the years. I would have, except I was in California at the time. And I just got to start by saying, I know that you are coming up on your 90th birthday.
Absolutely.
Now, this is unbelievable, right? Because you visited our house, okay, and we chatted over the weekend. Yeah. I was just thinking to myself, in fact, I was comparing you to Joe Biden. you're a decade older than Joe Biden, and yet you're the very model of lucidity. You're also the model of health. Yeah. I mean, we were worried, this studio is up on the second floor. Debbie's like, I wonder, and you're like, oh no, I'll run up the stairs. So let me just start by asking you, what's your secret?
Well, God has been good to me. There's no question about that. And I attribute the health to that point. 9/11. I'm a 9/11 baby.
Oh.
Did you know that? Yeah, 9/11. And that's when I'll turn a 90th birthday.
Oh, my gosh.
I have a granddaughter that was also a 9/11 baby. So, very special day.
I want people to get to know you. So I want to start with your story. Right. Now, I'm just doing my math, counting my way back. But since we're in 1921, you were probably born in 1931. And talk about that. Tell us about your background and also how you became interested in the subject of meteorology.
Right. Well, in 1931, you remember, we had the Dust Bowl. And then in 1929, we had the major crisis.
The Depression.
Right. And I was born in Northwest Kansas, and to say that we lived in poverty would be an understatement. It was unbelievable.
What does that mean? Talk about that.
Well, we had nothing. We had food because Granddad had a farm, and he had livestock, so we had meat, he had some chickens, and so we had milk and eggs and things like that. So the necessities of life, in other words, food, to survive, we did have that. But apart from that, we had nothing. I mean, it was unbelievable. I don't know why my folks stayed there. And literally, thousands and tens of thousands didn't. They got in whatever they could get in a dilapidated car and headed to California.
I mean, I remember reading John Steinbeck, you know, the Grapes of Wrath, the Okies all moving out west in search of gold and all that. Wow. So that's amazing. So then what happened?
Well, you know, I'd like to point out that when I was a preteen, I to go to school, we always had our goggles with us because we never knew when one of these dust storms was going to blow in, and we had to protect our eyes, and there was no paint. Everything was sandblasted, so there was no paint at all.
So I think what you're getting at or implying here is that when people talk about the fact that, oh, we've got dust storms today like we never had before, what you're trying to say, it was a lot worse, right?
I was there.
you were there.
I was there.
Right? Now, how about meteorology? How did you get there?
Well, I backdoored into meteorology. I started out in life to become a basketball coach. And I went off to college and played basketball for 4 years and tennis with every intention of becoming a basketball coach. And the chemistry professor was very interested in basketball. He came over to me and said, Neil, you got a major in science. And I said, no, I'm not interested. Yeah, but when you graduate, if you're a science major, you'll have a competitive edge over all your friends who are phys ed majors. Because they're always looking for science teachers.
You wanted to be a coach.
Yeah, I wanted to be a coach, but I could be a science teacher coach. Okay.
Oh, interesting.
So that's the way that I got into science. And then when I was a senior in college, I found out the Air Force was looking for science majors to go into their meteorology program. So I signed up real quick. They sent me to St. Louis University for a year. And then I ended up on Okinawa. Now, this is a little island in the Western Pacific that's famous for typhoons.
Wow.
The first summer I was on the island, I was in 3 typhoons. It's wild over there.
So that developed, you began to see the power of these storms, and I guess we're fascinated. We all have a sense of awe when we see these incredible storms. And so you decided to make a career of it you got out of the forces.
Right. So when I left the Air Force, I decided that I'd go back to graduate school. And I wanted to major in tropical meteorology, and that's the way I ended up at Florida State.
And you were at the National Hurricane Center, it looks like, for
a long time.
but you were director 1974 to 87.
Right.
And then after that, you were, for 20 years, it seems, the chief meteorologist at KHOU.
That's right.
I know in this town, right in Houston, you're a legend because, in fact, even the people at the studio were excited. Oh my gosh, Dr. Frank is coming to the studio. I mean, they were literally giddy, and Debbie is giddy. So it's wonderful. Well, thanks for being here. This is awesome. We're going to get, when we come back, we're going to dive into the issues surrounding climate change. We'll be right back. As you know, my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. He created the new Giza Dream Bed Sheets. Now, these look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep for me, which is crucial for my busy schedule. Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Now, the first night you sleep on the Giza sheets, that's it. You'll never want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream Sheets come in a variety of sizes and colors, and Mike is making a special offer for my listeners. Sale of the year for a limited time. 50% off, as low as $49.99 on the sheets. This is crazy. Call 800-876-0227. Again, 800-876-0227, or go to mypillow.com. Make sure to use promo code DINESH, Dinesh. I'm back with meteorologist Dr. Neil Frank, the former director of the National Hurricane Center. You know, Dr. Frank, you were talking about the Dust Bowl. And I think it's interesting to show people a graph. Let's look at graph number one. And here it is.
And what we see here is the number of stations in the United States reported their high maximum temperature over 95 degrees.
Okay.
All right. If you're going to have a drought, you need to have a lot of hot air, right? And so, and that would be from the period of June through August. All right. Over here on the left-hand side, that peak is the Dust Bowl years. Boy, it was incredible.
And so this is the temperature.
Yeah, exactly. And no, this is the number of days, the percent of days that had temperatures over 95 degrees.
Oh, gotcha. And then here's 1920, 1940, 1960, 1980. Yeah. So what I get from this graph is that it was a lot hotter in 1936, and we've actually seen a decline.
That's right.
Over time.
All the way to the current.
Fascinating.
There was another important drought in the 50s, and you can see that little peak there. But nothing that we've seen now compares to what we saw in the 30s. It was an indescribable.
Okay, we can move on. But let's talk about how you got into the issue of global warming. I mean, you are a meteorologist. Your expertise is storms and hurricanes. Talk about what interested you in this topic.
Well, it's interesting that in meteorology, you have a very small group of people. And I had specialized more in tropical meteorology. And so in the 80s and 90s, when some of the people that I knew are friends, not close friends, but they were working in climate. And in the 80s and 90s, the carbon dioxide was increasing at the same time the Earth was increasing. And so they said, this may be carbon dioxide. This whole problem is being caused by carbon dioxide. I didn't dispute that. I recognized their expertise in climatology. And so I didn't.
And strictly speaking, they were right, right?
And I mean,
when you look at James Hansen, some of his charts that show a rise of both CO2 and a rise of global temperature, there was no reason to disbelieve any of that. But what happened in your life that you began to go, I better take a closer look?
Well, I had a good friend by the name of Dr. Bill Gray. Now, if some of you in the tropics recognize that this name, he was the first one that started forecasting the number of hurricanes that we have each season. A very good friend of mine, a professor out at Colorado State. And he started to talk to me, and he said, Neil, he said, you haven't looked at the data. Yeah, in the 80s and the 90s, there was good correlation. But prior to that, there wasn't a good correlation. And after that, there's not a good correlation. You need to spend some time looking into this.
So let me draw out the significance. What you're saying is that there was a period of about 20 or 30 years in which you had kind of matching rising levels of CO2 and measured increases in the Earth's warming. And they ran side by side, these two. But this was almost an anomalous period. And that if you look before, let's look after. Okay, let's look after this period. How much warming has there been of the Earth, let's say in the last 20 years?
None. So there's been no warming, yet carbon dioxide has continued to increase.
What about before that? Let's look at the period, let's say from the 50s to the 70s.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
As I recall, you came over here in the middle of the coal period. You remember when you came here from India, everybody was concerned that we were headed towards an ice age. I mean, 35 years that the Earth cooled, and all the experts, international experts, says we are headed towards an ice age.
Now, I have a book on my shelf. I didn't bring it with me, and it's called Global Cooling.
That's right.
And it's written by a journalist, but it's got blurbs on the back. From world-famous scientists, University of Wisconsin and Madison, all saying that it is a consensus of scientists
that
the Earth is cooling. It's getting cooler, not warmer, but cooler. And in fact, all kinds of ridiculous remedies. This book proposes things like, let's try to build a bridge across the Bering Strait, right? So you were there. You saw this consensus.
Yeah.
And so you recognize that it seems to me what you're saying is that these things move in cycles.
Absolutely.
Let's look at graph number two so we can get a kind of big picture of the whole thing. Now, this is graph. You need to explain this graph.
All right. The top graph shows the temperature in the northern hemisphere as determined by ice core samples out of Greenland. The bottom of the graph shows the carbon dioxide levels during this 10,000-year period. Now, why are we looking at 10,000 years? We know from past data that the Earth goes through cycles. We have 100,000 years of an ice age, 10,000 years of a warm period. So we are in this 10,000-year warm period. And so at the top of the graph, you can see that there's a 1,000-year cycle in these peaks. Here we are right over here at the right.
So here, this graph is going years before now, right? So this is actually
10,000 years
ago. 10,000 years ago. Wow. Right. Okay.
All right. So you can, if carbon dioxide was the cause of these peaks up here, we'd ought to see these peaks down here. They're not there.
In other words, you're saying that the carbon dioxide levels would have to sort of match
the movement
of these graphs this to be the cause of this.
That's right.
But in fact, what we see is carbon dioxide levels really, of course, not surprisingly, rising in the last couple of, you know, 100 years, certainly, and rising over with mankind's time on the planet. But it doesn't match this at all.
As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. Look at this. 8,000 years ago, the northern hemisphere was probably 2 to 3 degrees warmer than it is today. Here we are over here to the right, right?
Yes, exactly.
Carbon dioxide levels at the early part of this 10,000 year were low, in the lower 200s. And then as the Earth cooled off, carbon dioxide levels rise. Well, that's just the opposite of what we're being told.
So what I draw from this is that, yes, there has been some recent warming, although, as you say, not in the last 20 or 25 years, but clearly other factors are causing it, right? I mean, isn't that a reasonable inference from the data?
Absolutely.
By the way, I should point out to people, if you're listening to this on audio, we're trying to draw out the significance of what's being talked about. But it would be really cool if you go back and watch on video. This podcast is up on YouTube. It's also up on Rumble. So this way you can actually see the graphs, and it becomes a real learning experience because the data is all right up on the board behind us. When we come back, we're going to dive a little bit more into this issue of what is causing the warming that does occur if it is not CO2. We'll be right back. I'm kind of a foodie, and my problem is that food that tastes good is usually not very healthy, and food that's healthy doesn't taste too good. Then I discovered Uprising Food, and it was kind of a shock. This is the best bread I've ever tasted, and Debbie found out it has the right combo of carbs and protein and tons of fiber, super important for both of our health. Now, these Uprising guys have cracked the code on healthy bread. You simply can't find something this healthy, that tastes this good, that's this fresh. Only 2 net carbs per serving, 6 grams of protein, and 9 grams of fiber. This food is insanely good for you. Uprising Food covers paleo to clean keto to simple low carb to high fiber to dairy free to grain free lifestyle. Uprising has made fiber delicious with their patent pending breakthrough in psyllium husk activation. These baking wizards are making fantastic digestive health easy for all of us. They bake with real superfood ingredients. You'll find ingredients like almonds, MCT oil, apple cider vinegar, egg white, psyllium husk, and olive oil. Uprising's mission is to liberate all of us from a broken food system that's stealing our health. It's David versus Goliath, and they want to upgrade bread and bring bread back to the table for all of us. For me, it's all about the taste, and when I find stuff that tastes great and is good for me, I'm sold. Uprising Food has absolutely nailed the taste factor on both their sourdough-esque cubes and the crunch factor on their newly launched Freedom Chips. Their food is super filling. I'm getting hungry just talking about it. Go to uprisingfood.com and use code Dinesh. You'll get $10 off the starter bundle. They ship directly to your door. That's uprisingfood.com and use my code Dinesh to get $10 off your order. I'm back with meteorologist Dr. Frank, former director of the National Hurricane Center. Dr. Frank, let's talk a little bit about this kind of distinctive warm period. We see it to the tip of the graph,
right here at
the very end, a surge of warming. And talk about Dr. James Hansen, the NASA scientist, considered sort of the apostle of global warming.
Absolutely.
And giving testimony before Congress. Talk about that.
Well, first of all, you need to point out that it has warmed the last 150 years. Nobody is debating that. I don't know a skeptic that wouldn't acknowledge that we have had warming over the last 150 plus years.
And how much warming?
Oh, I would say 1 to 2 degrees or something like that.
Somewhere in the range. Yeah, and that's what the data shows.
Right. And But it was hot 1,000 years ago. As a matter of fact, they farmed in Greenland for 400 years.
Wow.
It was warm enough then. And it was hot during the Roman period, during the time of Christ, 2000. It was warm 3,000 years ago. So here you have these peaks, but there's no peaks down here in the carbon dioxide levels that would match these peaks up here.
But you mentioned an interesting gimmick that Hansen was able to use on the day of his testimony.
Absolutely.
What did he do?
Now, you remember we talked about the fact that in the 80s and the 90s, carbon dioxide was increasing, and also the Earth's temperature was increasing. So Hansen said, well, let me put that relationship into this numerical model that I have. Well, if you tell the numerical model to forecast warming, it is going to forecast warming. So he put this in his model, and he ran this model out 100 years and said, boy, we are frying the Earth. Now, it's interesting. The day that Hansen made this statement was June the 7th, as I recall, in 1988. They looked back through the records in Washington, D.C., and they found out that June the 7th historically was the hottest day. So they decided, we're going to make the announcement on June the 7th. Well, it turned out it was a hot day. They went in the night before and opened all the windows and out all this hot air in this building. So in a very hot day, in a very hot room, he announced that we are destroying the Earth.
And, of course, for the typical congressman, when he starts sweating, you know, he thinks, oh, my God, this is a crisis because obviously, we're going to fry the whole Earth because I'm getting hot. Now, you know, we're sometimes reminded that there is, in fact, an important distinction between weather and climate.
Absolutely.
Let's explain that distinction. Is weather the seasonal fluctuation of temperature, whereas climate is a kind of annual average?
Well, climate would be the long-term average.
Right.
Weather is what we experience today and tomorrow, and the hurricane, the winter blizzard, and the February cold snap that we had. That's weather. Now, if you average this over a period of months and maybe years, then you get the climate.
Now, you mentioned with Dr. Hansen models. I think that's critical because I think you made the point to Debbie and me that you've got, you know, here you are, you're out there, you're at the hurricane center, you're looking at actual hurricanes, you've gone to places like Galveston and photographed the coast. In fact, one of your innovations at the hurricane center was to take before and after pictures. You take pictures of the coast. Later, if a hurricane hits, you go back so you can show people what damage the hurricane did. And by contrast with you, you've got these academics who have no direct experience with any of this, and what they do is they cook models.
That's right.
And your point is that they rig the models, in a sense, because they'll pick a warming period.
That's right.
And then they plug that into the computer, and they go, if, you know, it's the kind of good old economist tool, all other things being equal, but all other things aren't equal, but if you pick this piece of data and you project from there, naturally you're going to see continuous warming, right?
Absolutely. And again, I remind you that in the 80s and the 90s, there was good correlation between carbon dioxide and the Earth's temperature. And so when you build that relationship into the model and you forecast that the carbon dioxide is going to continue to increase, I'm telling you the model is going to forecast warming.
Exactly. There's a phrase in statistics called GIGO, which is garbage in, garbage out.
Absolutely.
So what you get out of the sausage machine is pretty much what you put in.
Right.
And that's what you're saying is going on. What do you think if carbon dioxide is not the primary cause of these fluctuations, what is?
Well, there's many opportunities. The Chinese are focusing on the sun. This big ball of energy that we see out there every day. It's hard to look at the way we measure the energy from the sun and correlate to weather. That's a difficult task. But they are indirectly finding ways that they can correlate what happens on the sun with what's happening in the weather. Now, one of the ways that we measure the activity on the sun is sunspots. All right, the sunspot cycle, when there's a lot of sunspots, that means the sun is very active. And in the 80s and the 90s, and so far, it's been very active. But now what's happening is the sunspot activity is reducing back to the same levels it was some 150, 200 years ago. And so a lot of the Chinese are saying, whoa, we may be in for a cooling cycle rather than a warming cycle. So sun would be one of the things that we look at.
Very interesting. When we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Frank about all the various things that are attributed to climate change,
right.
Rising oceans, storms, hurricanes, and we'll find out if it is really true that we are seeing more hurricanes, more storms, more rising oceans, and if that can be reasonably blamed on so-called climate change. We'll be right back. If you're thinking of replacing your carpets due to pet stains and odors, you must try Genesis 950. The review's unbelievable. This is one product that actually works. Now, with water, it breaks down the bonds of stains and odors so they are gone for good. Its antibacterial component removes pet odors from carpet and padding. It can be used in a carpet cleaning machine, and it's green, so it's safe for your family and pets. Genesis 950 is made in America. 1 gallon of industrial strength Genesis 950 makes up to 7 gallons of cleaner. But Genesis 950 is also great for bathrooms, floors, upholstery, and grease stains. Debbie uses it to clean the entire kitchen, and when I got chocolate all over my pants and on the couch, Genesis 950 miraculously took it right off. Genesis 950 has great customer service. Order 1 gallon direct at genesis950.com. You'll get free spray bottle, free shipping, and a $10 coupon using the code Dinesh. That's genesis950.com. Coupon only available for 1 gallon purchase. Genesis 950. It's much cheaper than replacing your carpets or your pants or your couch. I'm back with Dr. Neil Frank, the former director of the National Hurricane Center. We're talking about climate change. You know, Dr. Frank, I kind of chuckle because, as you said, in the 70s, it was global cooling.
Yeah.
Then it became global warming. And since this gang is so horrible about making predictions, I think you said, didn't you say that, what percentage of their predictions have proven to be correct?
Well, I saw a paper recently where somebody went back to 1970, and they've been able to count, how many was it? Was it 79 forecasts that have been made? We are now able, with time, to verify 48 of those, and all of them have been wrong.
All of them are wrong.
All of them are wrong.
Yeah, so
why should we believe the 31 that yet
haven't been checked out?
Exactly.
Such as AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We have 12 more years for the Earth.
That's right.
I think 12 years from now, they'll extend that deadline. We have six more years for the Earth. Now, I think this is really why they decided to go with the name climate change. Because climate change, I mean, from a scientific point of view, it is such an empty concept.
That's right.
Because, I mean, change is a fact of life.
That's
this
right.
is sort of like talking about human change.
That's
you know,
right.
obviously yesterday is not the same as today,
That's
which
right.
won't be the same as tomorrow. So you have an empty theory. One of the ways they try to convince people of this, because I think when most of us think back to when we were kids, we don't find the weather to be radically different than it is now. Right. So experience doesn't suggest that the earth is baking to someone's turned up the oven, so to speak, or to quote Al Gore, the earth has a fever.
Right.
But what they try to do to people, I think, to convince them that this is real is they point to spectacular weather events. And
Absolutely.
I want to start talking about those in some detail. Let's start with the issue of the oceans rising.
Right.
You know, I've tweeted out and chuckled about the idea of the Obamas buying this expensive property right on Martha's Vineyard. You know, obviously they don't think that it's going to be flooded and their property value will be destroyed. I think $12 million. But let's look at some data. Here's a graph.
Incidentally, I think Al Gore has a place in California the same way.
And I know the Bidens have a place on Rehoboth Beach. So this, and real estate agents don't believe it, and buyers don't believe it, and sellers don't believe it. But let's look at what the data shows. This is global average sea level changes.
From 1855. Way over there, right over to the current.
To now.
You see that just a steady rise. There's no debate that the earth has, or the sea level has been rising as we came out of the real ice age, the 100,000 years ice age. And when the earth started warming, then we started seeing a rise in sea level. But the rate of rise is 8 inches per century. 8 inches per century.
So let's pause.
Another 8 inches by the year 2100. I don't think it's going to flood Galveston Island.
Yes.
Okay.
So, but I see another significance in this eight inches, which is to say, let's look at between, 1855 right. and 1875, right. when let's just say that right. the Industrial Revolution had gotten started,
Absolutely.
But the level of CO2 being pumped into right. the atmosphere was much less than it Absolutely. Is now.
Right.
And yet, you're saying
right.
the sea level rose 8 inches.
That's right.
So the sea level rise has been roughly constant.
Right.
And you're saying we can live with 8 inches.
Absolutely.
Big deal. Right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And, you know, if you go back here into the early period of time, this 8 inches is not at all unusual for the rise of sea level. And I point out that the carbon dioxide levels really didn't start up until after World War II. A little bit after World War I, back over here, but it's World War II where you saw it.
I mean, that's pretty obvious because right. even take something like the car.
Right.
You know, even
right.
this is about when Henry Ford began to mass
right.
produce the car. So clearly before 1915,
right.
nobody was putting all that car fumes
right.
into the atmosphere. Let's go to another chart. This is chart number 4, because I now want to talk about forest fires.
Well, you know, Dennis, let me just make one more comment.
Yeah, go for
this.
It.
All of the projections in the future are based on the numerical models. Numerical models that have this concept of carbon dioxide is causing the Earth's temperature. Even today, the models still have that built into their models. Well, so you're going to forecast rising sea levels. Well, that's what the model, you've told the model to do.
Oh, okay. Fascinating. Yes.
Right.
Let's look at forest
right.
areas burned. And this is 1926 to 2017.
We only left, it would be 1926, before World War II. Look at the devastating that was taking place.
So this is million acres
That's
burned.
Right.
And you're saying in 1926, there were about 25 million acres
That's
burned
right.
by forest fires. And this peaked in the 30s
well,
when you had over 50 million.
Yeah, and this is your Dust Bowl, the years, okay.
Yes.
And so very, very hot temperatures over the entire. And we didn't see a change until World War II. Now, I've asked foresters, what happened here? Well, we initiated some very effective programs to preserve our forests.
Let me put it differently for people who are just listening to this. So starting about 1958
right.
and continuing to the present,
right.
a dramatic plummeting of forest areas
Absolutely.
Burned. And you're saying all of this has absolutely nothing to do with climate change,
Absolutely.
But what it has to do with is effective forestry.
That's right. Right. And we also had a lot of education here for our people. Now, you'll notice that over here, as we move towards the current, there is a little slight increase. Foresters tell me that that's where you're banning some of the programs that were so effective back in the year. Ah, you have I remember not too long ago, a big windstorm hit Colorado and knocked down a whole bunch of trees, and loggers wanted to get in there and log those. Environmentalists wouldn't let them build roads. So here these trees are sitting in there and ready for the next fire.
Wow.
So we abandoned some of the tools, and it's also important to note that we are moving into areas because of the population growth. We are moving into areas here. So this has nothing to do with carbon dioxide, is the point that I make.
When we come back, I want to get into your zone, which is I want to talk about storms and
right.
hurricanes. We'll be right back. Did you ever read the fine print that appears when you start browsing in an incognito or privacy mode? It says that your internet activity might still be visible to your employer, your school, or your service provider. Now, how can they even call it incognito? To really stop people from seeing the sites you visit, you need to do what I do and use ExpressVPN. Now, every time you've used Wi-Fi at a coffee shop or other public place, without ExpressVPN, every site you visit could be logged by the admin of that network. And that's still true even when you're in so-called incognito mode. What's more, your internet home provider can also see and record your browsing data. And in the U.S., they're legally allowed to sell that data to advertisers. ExpressVPN is an app that encrypts all of your network data and reroutes it through a network of secure servers so that your private online activity stays private. ExpressVPN works on all your devices. It's super easy to use. The app has one button. You tap it to connect and boom, your browsing activity is secure. Stop letting strangers invade your online privacy. Protect yourself at expressvpn.com/Dinesh. Use my link at expressvpn.com/Dinesh to get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh. I'm back with Dr. Neil Frank, former director of the National Hurricane Center, and we want to talk about hurricanes.
Right.
but let's start at the most basic level. What is a hurricane?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it's got winds of 75 miles an hour or something, you know. Hurricanes, it's interesting that hurricanes are not freak accidents of nature that are designed to inflict damage on human beings and the coastal areas. They have a very useful function. In the atmosphere, you have cold air in the polar regions and warm air in the tropical regions. Now, in order to have a planet that lives on, we have to mix this up. The winter storm is the primary way that that's happened. Now, in the summertime, when the boundary between the cold air and the warm air moves into higher latitudes, here's this big, big tropical area, and the heat is just perking away. Well, a hurricane is a bubble of hot air.
I see.
And when that hurricane moves into higher latitude, it removes heat from the tropics, and it makes it tolerable for us to live.
Now, you told us that when you were at the Hurricane Center, you noticed that many people, even on the coast, the east coast of America, Florida, the Texas coast, had never experienced a hurricane. And so you said, look, we're trying to develop all this new technology, and that's cool, but we need to educate people about what a hurricane is. And that was a lot of what you did.
That's right.
Was educate people about how lethal these hurricanes can be and how homes should be constructed and so on. Let's bring this back to the global warming, the climate change debate, because the argument, as I understand it, is that the reason we're seeing a surge of hurricanes and more, not just more hurricanes, but more vicious, destructive hurricanes is due to man-made climate change. Now, here we have a graph we're going to take a good look at, and you're going to tell us what it means.
First of all, let me tell you that the reason we're being told that is because the activists are saying their numerical models show that. But the data doesn't support what they're saying.
Okay, so let's be clear. You're saying that they're claiming that there are more hurricanes, not because there are actually more hurricanes, but because their models predict more hurricanes.
Exactly.
I see. Okay, so they're not counting the hurricanes.
No.
They're just guessing based upon a model.
And so we have a hurricane. That's global warming.
Right. So now let's look at actual hurricanes.
Now, in terms of the Atlantic, I think the only realistic way of determining the number, whether there's been an increase in hurricanes or not, is to look at the landfall of major hurricanes. Now, a major hurricane would be the category 3, 4, 5, or winds in excess of 150 miles an hour. So let's start on the left-hand side, 1850. And by decade, you can see the number of major hurricanes that have made landfall in the United States.
Okay, let me just explain. So these are from 1850 to the present, we're going decade by decade, and we're counting major hurricanes, and each of these graphs represents the number of major hurricanes in that decade.
That made landfall. In the lower 48.
Yes.
We're not talking about hurricanes in the Eastern Atlantic or someplace. That's a big question. So I would concede to you that in 1880, a tropical storm might have made landfall in a remote area and it wouldn't have been recorded. But I can almost assure you that if it had a winds of 110 miles an hour, it's in here. So this is the number of major hurricanes that made landfall in the lower 48 by decades. Well, you can see the trend is downward. And particularly since the 40s and the 50s. Florida got hit by 7 hurricanes in the 40s, and the Carolinas got hit by 6 hurricanes in the 50s. So there has been a downward trend, and there's been no, in other words, what I'm telling you, there's no evidence from the data to suggest that there's been an increase.
And so it seems like hurricane levels are reasonably flat from the 1850s to the 1950s of almost a century, a little bit up, a little bit down.
Right.
But then there's been a kind of decline so that it's pretty clear that, let's say, between 2000 and 2020, a lot fewer hurricanes than, let's say, between 1940 and 1960.
And that would be landfalling storms now,
Yes, exactly.
Because when we look in the Atlantic, you're getting a darn different picture. Oh, we're seeing a lot more hurricanes out there. But this graph only shows the trend for landfalling hurricanes in the lower 48.
Let's look at another graph. This would be graph number 6.
Right.
And here we're gonna look at, well, this is a graph that covers hurricanes and storms.
And storms. The hurricanes would be the red, and the storms would be in the yellow from 1850 all the way over to 2015.
Okay.
All right. Well, there has been an increase in the number of storms. There's no question about it. Particularly the yellows. We're a lot of tropical storms. We're naming a lot more than we did back in the 1800s. We didn't have any way of noting some of these weak storms back at that time. And you'll notice that there is a trend up and down, up and down. There's a 60-year cycle in the Earth's temperature that is reflected in the hurricane activity. So we had 30 years when we have warming, then we have 30 years when we have cooling, you have 30 years when you have warming. Now let's look at the hurricane starting over here in 1850.
Well, just pause for a second, yeah, because it looks to me like on the longer scale, right, far from seeing a right kind of constant warming, we're seeing a cyclical pattern,
right,
hotter, cooler, hotter, cooler.
Right.
And part of what I think you're saying is that what the climate change activists are doing is taking one of these periods,
that's
namely
right
the 80s and 90s,
right here,
pretending like that is normal,
that's
that
right
that's been going on constantly and will go on,
right,
and the distortion comes right there.
Right.
And then here, I think what you're saying, and tell me if I'm right about this, I see that satellites come into
right
play when?
Oh, in the late 60s, in the 70s, let's say in the 70s. Now, the activists liked to start their graphs here in 1970. Well, we were in this cold period. Remember we talked about the cold period? Well, that ended in 1975. And then we went back into an active period. So if you look at the hurricanes from 19 in the 70s, then we went into an active period. The earth was warming. And so we saw an increase in active. It had nothing to do with carbon dioxide.
Now, part of what I think, isn't it also a fact that our measurements have gotten better?
Oh, yes.
So we can count.
Right.
You talked about how,
right,
when we met, you were talking about how there are hurricanes out at sea.
That's right.
And in the past, we wouldn't
right
even have any idea
that's
about
right
them, let alone name them.
That's right.
So there's been an increase in counting
that's
due to
right
technology, an increase in naming. I think
right
you said that
right
we now kind of name everything,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Even if a hurricane hits, doesn't even come to America,
right,
the American authorities
right
are naming it.
We named one last year just before it made landfall in Portugal. Now, this is a key point, satellites. Take a look here. See, we're seeing an increase. Well, we're seeing an increase because a lot of these storms are in the eastern Atlantic.
Oh, I see.
Okay. If you go back to 1933, in the eastern Atlantic, we had 21 named storms that year. It was until 2020 and 2025, it was the most active hurricane period in the record. And I mean, it was, the tropics were boiling, right? I've drawn a vertical line here. This would be the eastward extent that reconnaissance planes could go out. So back in this time, we would send a reconnaissance plane out every day from Puerto Rico. We didn't know what was happening over here in the eastern. Look at that. 1933, we did 21 named storm. Nothing was recorded in the eastern Atlantic. And yet 2005, when we had 28 storm, we had 7 registered over here. So satellite pictures have had a big impact on the number of storms we see here. And you remember in the previous graph, we saw a lot more of the tropical storms, the yellow ones, in this period of time. Well, that's because we're seeing things out here. And the other thing is in the North Atlantic, we are naming things now that we did not name before we had satellites.
Well, I mean, the remarkable conclusion for
right
me is that this is not necessarily a change in the number of events.
That's right.
But a change in the level of human knowledge.
That's right.
Not to mention
right
a change in the nomenclature,
right,
the act of naming these.
Right.
And so it's almost like, you know, you have a number of species,
right?
Right? And let's
right
say in the old days, people only knew that there were 4,000 species.
Right.
Now they go, oh, we've got 80,000 species because we've named them all.
That's
and
right
it's not because the number of species on
right
the earth has increased
right
by, you know, 15-fold.
Right.
It's just that we are now counting things that we didn't count before.
Right.
And so we have the illusion that the actual events are increasing. Actually, it's only our knowledge that's
right
increasing. We'll be right back. From critical race theory in your children's classrooms to policy changes under the current administration, you need to know what's happening from a news source you can trust. Unfortunately, most media outlets opt for shameless virtue signaling and state propaganda in lieu of the truth. It's an insult to your intelligence, which is why my good friends at the Daily Wire are providing an alternative. Now, from the Daily Wire newsroom comes Morning Wire, a daily morning news podcast that gives you the facts you need to know first. Brought to you by Daily Wire Editor-in-Chief John Bickley and co-host Georgia Howe, Morning Wire will wake you up with the latest developments in politics, sports, culture, and education, all with a heavy emphasis on the truth. Episodes drop every weekday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, so subscribe now to hear the trailer. And if you like what you hear, leave a 5-star review to help Daily Wire provide a source that all Americans can wake up with and trust. Each episode will be short, with only enough room to fit the facts so you can be sure your breakfast isn't being served with a side of someone else's agenda. Subscribe to Morning Wire as soon as you can. I'm back with meteorologist Dr. Neil Frank, the former director of the National Hurricane Center. Dr. Frank, I want to talk about CO2, carbon dioxide. Now, everybody knows, we all learn in fourth grade that we breathe in oxygen and we breathe out carbon dioxide. Right. For plants, I guess it's the opposite, right? They take carbon dioxide, they release oxygen. Right. Now, so we learn about carbon dioxide as part of this natural process. Right. Right. And then we turn to politics and we find these climate change activists acting like carbon dioxide is like the worst thing on the planet. The less, the better. We got to get rid of all the carbon dioxide. Right. So talk about carbon dioxide and the role it plays in the ecosystem and why not only do we need it, but we might need more of it.
Right. Well, let's start by making this statement. That there's no dispute that the Earth has warmed the last 150 years. As we have said before, the debate is whether carbon dioxide is responsible for that.
Right.
I'm of the opinion, and many, many credible skeptics are of the opinion that carbon dioxide is not a major factor in the Earth's temperature. There's a number of reasons for that. Number one, it's a very, very minor gas. Not 4% of the atmosphere. Not 0.4% of the atmosphere, it's 0.04% of the atmosphere. Now, the football stadium in Dallas holds 100,000 people. If you assign a molecule of air to every one of those seats, there'd be 70,000 nitrogen seats, 20,000 oxygen seats. There'd only be 40 of carbon dioxide. So it is a very minor gas. And we're saying that 4 seats in the football stadium in Dallas will control the atmosphere. No, I don't think so. Nor do I think that 0.04% of the atmosphere is going to control the Earth's temperature. So that's the skeptic's position. We don't believe that carbon dioxide is a major factor. But if we can demonize fossil fuels that are producing carbon dioxide, then we can achieve a goal that the activists would like to achieve.
We'll come back to that goal, but let's stay with the carbon dioxide for a little bit. Now, I learned in science class that there is something called the greenhouse effect, which is that as you increase the amount of carbon in the atmosphere, there is a warming effect. Yeah. And you're not denying that. You're saying, of course, that's true.
Absolutely.
But you're saying that if you look at the volume of gases in the atmosphere, the carbon dioxide is so infinitesimal that the warming effect is not significant.
90% of the warming comes from water vapor, not carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
And we are now beginning to understand that there are cyclic patterns of the water vapor in the atmosphere that might be 60-year cycles. We have a lot of clouds for 30 years and then fewer clouds for 30 years. And that may have an impact on the Earth's temperature. We don't know.
Let's talk about the benefits of CO2.
Right.
Let's look at this graph here.
Well, let's start by, again, the blue line would indicate the Earth's temperature from 1880. And remember, we talked about the Earth has a 60-year cycle. It cools for 30 years and warms for 30 years. And that would be indicated in the light blue line. And you can see that here in this 80s and 90s, there is good correlation. But just prior to that, there was no correlation.
Okay, correlation between carbon dioxide and Earth warming.
They were both rising at the same time. But in the 35-year period before that, the carbon dioxide, the Earth's temperature was cooling and the carbon dioxide levels were rising, not shown here. But if we go to 2000, the Earth's temperature has leveled off and carbon dioxide continues to increase.
And then you notice the same trend as you go backward.
Exactly.
So here you find in this period, 1910 to 1940, more carbon dioxide, more warming.
Not much carbon dioxide.
Not much more. Yeah.
And there was a significant warming during this time. Matter of fact, in the 1940s, there's less ice in the Arctic than there is today. That was a major, major warming period. And then we went into that cool period when you arrived over here.
That's right. Okay. Let's look at the next graph because it really struck me very interesting. And that is, you say, can anything good come from CO2? So let's talk about that.
Well, a professor at the University of Arizona has done some fascinating work in correlating the carbon dioxide with plant growth. And he's finding, and there are literally hundreds of studies on this, okay? If you take 45 of the plants that feed 95% of the earth, you'll find that if we have a doubling of carbon dioxide, in other words, from 400 parts per million to 800 parts per million, there would be at least a 50% increase in most of those plants that feed the earth. And in some cases, I don't know why, carrots and turnips, it gets up to 80%. So there is an increase of 80%. Now, remind me now, we're going to double carbon dioxide. Maybe we're going to do that by 2050. And we're going to see, in some cases, an 80% in the increase in plant growth. And in most plant growth, it'd be 45 to 50%. You can change that into dollars. And if you do that, the estimate is that we would add $10 trillion to the economy of the United States just because of the increase in carbon dioxide.
And what you're also saying, if I can extrapolate, is that for a world that's growing in population, more mouths to feed, you're saying that a boosting of the productivity of the plant population of the earth is probably not a bad thing in order to be able to feed the world.
Right. Now, one of the things I like to ask activists, what is the optimum level of carbon dioxide? Has anyone ever asked that question? Well, it's not 400 parts per million. Nurseries that can control their environment for decades have boosted the levels up to 1,200, to 1,500, because they get this plant, the improvement in plant growth. So what is the optimum level? I think that we have been living in a carbon dioxide starved atmosphere. And maybe 1,200, 1,500 would be the more optimum level.
Fascinating. So what you're saying really is that the activist assumes that the level that we have now is like the perfect level. That's the level that like God made it at that level. Exactly. So therefore, if the level is increased, that'll be horrific. Right. It's bound to have catastrophic effects. And you're saying there's no reason to think that. There's no scientific basis for that statement.
Now, one of the things that I can tell you, if the carbon dioxide levels ever drop below 150, all plants die. Now, for the last 10,000 years, we've been just above that level in the 200 range. We've been just above the critical level, 200. At times, the carbon dioxide levels drop down to 180. That is really, really scary. So maybe 1,200, 1,500 would be the more optimum level.
You alluded to this. So when we come back in our last segment, I want to ask you, if all of this is right and there's no real basis, and these are guys who want to change the whole world economy based on this, what's their agenda? We'll be right back. I want to talk to you about investing in gold and precious metals. Now, on July 4th, 1776, we declared our independence from taxation from a government an ocean away. Today, our government is the one imposing oppressive taxes, while at the same time sending our wealth overseas and driving the value of the dollar into the ground through reckless spending. This is the time to declare your independence for your savings. Cut your ties to the U.S. dollar and invest in gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. If you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, hey, do it today. Text Dinesh to 484848. Get a free information kit on protecting your savings with gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and over 10,000 happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. I'm back for my final segment with Dr. Neil. We were talking about the agenda of these activists. Why do you think that they are willing to stoop to so much distortion, so much propaganda? Right. They want to, you know, they've got Greta Thunberg as their kind of, poster child. Right. And so you have a kind of an autistic kid who is supposed to be the moral symbol, the halo, if you will, of climate change. What do you think is the real agenda here?
Well, let's talk about two or three reasons why people are pushing global warming. Number one is money. Al Gore would be a classic example of that. Al Gore, as I understand it, invested in 14 green companies, subsidized by the federal government for $1.5 billion. And I don't know what he's worth today, but multi-million.
Just say he has a private plane. Exactly.
And so money is an issue. I don't know how many professors are being paid out of global warming money. Now, they have an excellent meteorology department over Texas A&M. I suspect that a lot of those professors are being paid out of global warming money. But that doesn't explain why there is this intensity to push this. And I've come to the conclusion that the environmental, as you have already pointed out in some of your books, that environmental issues are being used to force us into a Marxist socialist society.
In other words, they're a wedge to create more government control and more control over people's lives. I think you made the point when you came over to Debbie and me that the energy sector is critical. And if you control energy, basically you have the country in your hands.
You control the economy. And what a better way to control energy and destroy the economy than to demonize fossil fuels? We are a developed nation because of cheap energy, coal and fuel oil. There's no question about it. That is the secret for other developing countries in the world today. So if you demonize that, because, it creates carbon dioxide, and therefore we've got to change entirely and go to green energy, you destroy the economy.
And the Indians, the Chinese, they know that. They're not even paying one moment of genuine attention to this. They may give lip service, we're taking this very seriously. But the reality is they know they need to use a lot more energy to become fully developed countries. They don't hesitate to do it. And so they're hoping that the West will put manacles shackles on itself to increase the power of those countries. Right. Wow.
So if you're going to have a Marxist, socialist, whatever name you want to give it, worldwide, then one of the key issues is to destroy the United States. As long as the United States continues to be strong and powerful, then this agenda will never sweep through the world. So you've got to destroy the United States. And the first director of the first conference on global warming in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, Morris Strong, a multimillionaire out of Canada, said it isn't the only hope for the world is if we destroy the economy of the industrialized nations, that would be the United States. And another key United Nations official said, we've got to get away from the fact that global warming is an environmental issue. It is a way that we are going to redistribute wealth internationally.
I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, her chief of staff, Chakraborty, this Indian guy, said that. He basically said it's not a environmental thing, it is a take over the economy thing. I quote that in my book, United States of Socialism. Now, you're part of a group called the CO2 Coalition, a group of, well, I guess you have the skeptics and you have the true believers who are pushing the doctrine. Talk about the skeptics. Who are you and who's in the group? And also maybe here's a book that you recommended to me. This is by a geologist, Gregory Wrightstone, and it's called Inconvenient Facts.
That's right.
And as I thumb through it, I see just a plethora of charts and graphs and really beautifully presented data. So this is, we'll put this in the resources as one place to look. But who's in the CO2 Coalition?
The Carbon Dioxide Coalition was a group that was established several years ago as skeptics. And there's about 50 of us now that belong to this particular group. All of us have academic credentials. This is just one example of a group of skeptics. There are multitudes of skeptics around, but we don't have any voice because the media will not cover our action.
Even though one of the guys here is the founder of Greenpeace,
exactly.
So you've got all these and people with academic credentials.
Now, Gregory is the president right now of this Carbon Dioxide Coalition. And one of his assistants, I think that Patrick Moore was the president a year ago, if I remember right.
The Greenpeace guy.
Yeah. He was one of the co-founders of Greenpeace. He's now a skeptic. And he wrote a book called The Confessions of a Greenpeace Dropout. it's very interesting.
I should get that book. That sounds pretty good. Yeah.
So what I'm telling you is there is a solid group of skeptics across this nation, across the world, but we don't get our message out.
And it's not because, I mean, people say, well, there's these climate change deniers, as if to say that you're looking at the data and denying the data.
Exactly.
On the contrary, what we've seen in this podcast is we've laid out the data.
Right.
We've shown the patterns in the data. We've shown how the data is manipulated to serve an ideological end. And I think we've done a pretty good job in exposing these scoundrels. Let's close by me asking you about, I was thinking to myself that, very often people as role models, they think of, I want to be like Robert De Niro, but you realize that those guys have messed up lives.
Absolutely.
You've got an adoring wife. Right. You're almost 90 years old. How many grandchildren do you have?
I have 10 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren.
Wow.
16 is on the way.
Oh, wow. Well, what a life you've lived of scholarship, of involvement with the Hurricane Center, helping people to do better with their lives. Let me ask you, you alluded to this at the very beginning, your faith and how that's been central to you, but you weren't always a believer. How did you sort of come to Christ?
Right.
And what difference has that made in your life?
Well, I was born and raised in a very strong Christian environment in Northwest Kansas. And I inherited a stringent set of moral values, and I tried to live by those all my life. My wife and I went to church, and we were just church members. But we didn't have any personal commitment to this person of Jesus Christ. I didn't understand who this Jesus was. He was a historical figure, but what did he have to do with me in modern America? So the first problem I had was sin. I had the preconceived notion that sin was a specific act, and if you're not involved in the act, you can't be a sinner, and I wasn't involved in the act.
Bad words and bad actions.
But I finally came to the conclusion that sin was my selfish, greedy nature. That's the way I was born. And that separated me from God. And that somehow to get to God and in his kingdom involved this person of Jesus Christ. Now, I emphasize this selfish, greedy nature. 10 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, I didn't have to teach one of them to be selfish and greedy. That's the way they came out of the box.
Fascinating. Well, you also made the striking statement that when you encounter people who are not believers, you say to them, hey, listen, this is obviously an important question.
Right.
None of us knows what comes after death. How much time have you spent investigating the question of God?
Oh, you can't believe the hours. Initially, I set out to prove that there was no God. I was challenged by an airline pilot who was in our church, and he said, what are you doing in church every Sunday? I said, well, we have small children. It's important they be here. And he said, if there's something here for them, isn't there something for you? And I went home and I got angry. And then I began to reflect on that question. And if you ask a scientist what is truth, what he'll tell you? What does the facts show? And it occurred to me that I had spent 21 years of my life in formal classroom training. Not 1 hour was spent finding out whether there was any God. So I thought, okay, I'm going to collect me some facts and prove this is a little God and go to the beach on Sunday morning. Well, God didn't cooperate at all. And so I literally made a commitment. I'd spend at least 1 hour a day, and that became two, that became four, that became six, and I'm trying to prove no God. But you know what? I was looking for facts, and the thing that really spoke to me was facts. And facts, I mean in terms of testimonies. I probably have 200 books in my library at home of testimonies. Every time I hear somebody give a testimony, I go get the book, because that's a fact. I was one way and I accepted Christ and I became different.
Well, let's pause, because this is a very important point. You're saying that when you talk about facts, it's not just the historicity of the Gospels or things like that. Right. You're talking about lives changed.
Absolutely.
And that's data. That's
Absolutely.
Individual experiences Absolutely. Consolidated into right. a life of faith, and it right. made a difference. And then let's go to the next
right.
guy.
Right.
Right? And I think you also said strikingly that when you ask others who are not right. believers, how much time have
that's
you spent
right.
investigating this question, they give you this vacant look, because the truth of it is, see, I don't think they've spent any time, and
no.
I don't think they want to believe.
No.
Right? Isn't that the key?
Well, we're so programmed today. You can go home, and there's that tube, and you sit down at that tube after you had your meal, and then you go to sleep in the couch, and then you go back to bed, then you cycle that thing, and then on the weekend, there's some pro football game, or we can watch the Olympics. We're so programmed that we don't have time to sit down and ponder the issues of life.
Well, thank you, Dr. Frank. This has been really very, just awesome. It's been a lot of fun, too. So thank you for being here.
Great. Incidentally, I'm one of your biggest fans. I want you to know that.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.